Okay, we're still on handout 16. We're on the final couple weeks here, or three, maybe this week and two more weeks, and we'll be done with our study. So just to remember where we are, we're reviewing the religious situation, and last week we got to the Jewish sects. So we did look at what we know about the origins of the sects, when they arose in history, and then we got into the Pharisees, and we'll pick up there with the Pharisees. You remember that they were most likely at least the spiritual successors of the Hasidim, the pious ones, during the Maccabean period. Most scholars think that they arose as successors out of that philosophy and religious persuasion. And then we just got through their beliefs. And so what I think we'll start this morning by just summarizing the four major categories of beliefs that I went over last week, just to kind of get us back to where we were. So we summarize their beliefs. This is, of course, an oversimplification of their belief system, but just to summarize four of the major things that distinguish them from some of the other parties. One of them was the fact that they believe that the oral law was handed down from Moses with the same authority as the written law. And that was what's called the tradition of the elders. And that was one thing that distinguished them from the Sadducees, as we'll see this week. The second thing that we mentioned was that they were supernaturalists. They believed in a spirit world of angels and demons. We saw that from Paul's trial in Acts chapter 23. We learned that. And then kind of going along with that, they believed in the immortality of the soul. They believed in a future judgment, which you might expect goes with immortality of the soul, rewards and punishments, and the resurrection of the virtuous. And then the final thing that we noted was that they believed in fate. That's Josephus' term, by which he likely meant providence. One of the quotes that Josephus has here is that they ascribe all to fate and to God. But he says also that fate does cooperate in every action. So they had a strong doctrine of fate or providence, control of God, but they also made room for the freedom of men to act. And so they kind of had those two things together. And as an example of that, we looked at Gamaliel's speech in Acts chapter 5, if you remember. He said, when the apostles were brought on trial, he said, "Be careful or you're going to find yourself fighting against God." In other words, if God wants it to happen, it's going to happen. And you don't want to be on the wrong side of the conflict with God. That's a quick summary of what Gamaliel said in his speech. So that was the major four beliefs of the Pharisees that we looked at last week. And so we'll pick up here now with the characteristics of the Pharisees. So the first thing I wanted to do was start with some comments from Josephus. Remember that almost all of our information about the Jewish sects comes from the New Testament and from Josephus. So I'll be sprinkling in a lot of quotes from Josephus here since he's one of our major sources. So he says that the Pharisees are a certain sect of the Jews that appear more religious than others and seem to interpret the laws more accurately. So you can see they're very religious outwardly. They're very strict in their interpretation of the law. They're very attentive to the law. He also says that they live meanly. That's a quote, meanly, which probably refers to diet, but they had relatively simple mannerisms and lifestyle. They respect their elders, and they're friendly towards each other and have much regard for the people. So they were a very friendly group towards one another, and they have a lot of regard for the people, which, again, if you remember, the Pharisees were the ones that were the most popular with the people as well, as opposed to the Sadducees. So that kind of goes along with it. They looked out for the interests of the people. We learn from the New Testament, along with that, you'll notice that the Pharisees are more prominent in the New Testament than the Sadducees, and that's most likely because they were all the places where the people were, where the interactions were happening, and they were, you know, more in touch with the common people. Their actual practice, they were very scrupulous in ceremonial purity. That's things like food laws, keeping the Sabbath, all of the things that the Jews were required to do for ceremonial purity. And we see multiple examples of that in the New Testament, ceremonial washing, Sabbath rules, and such. They also fasted twice weekly, and there's multiple instances of that also, but I'll read from Luke chapter 18, This is actually the Pharisee and the tax collector. But remember what the Pharisee says. It says, the Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. So you see a reference there to the fact that the Pharisees fasted twice a week. Also, you see a reference there to tithing. I give a tenth of all I get. The Pharisees were very meticulous in their tithing, and they tithed down to the smallest detail of their income, even to the seeds that they would get as produce. So we'll take a look at that in a moment when we look at Jesus' criticism of the Pharisees. But there's multiple examples of their meticulousness in tithing also in the Gospels. And then throughout the time of the Hasmonean rulers, the Pharisees exercised a lot of influence in the Sanhedrin. They were the dominant influence in the Sanhedrin and also in the synagogues because of their emphasis in explaining the scripture to the people. So remember, the synagogue was a place where the Jews would come together to study the scriptures, and the teachers of the law became very important, the scribes, and then the Pharisees were very much involved in that, in teaching scripture to the people. So they had a lot of influence in the synagogues because of that. I mentioned before they were most influential among the common people. Their members were largely from the middle class, so they would be able to relate to the middle class and the common folk. And Josephus estimates that there were some 6,000 Pharisees in the party of the Pharisees, numbered around 6,000 at the end of Herod's life. So there were a lot of Pharisees. It was a large party and a popular party. And then you remember the story with Jannaeus Alexander. He was the one that persecuted the Pharisees and slaughtered many of them, one of the Hasmonean rulers. And you remember at the end of his life, he counseled his wife, Salome Alexandra, to make peace with the Pharisees. And the reason he gives is because they had great authority among the Jews. So he recognized that it was probably not politically wise to be opposing the Pharisees since they had such influence among the people. And so that's just another example of the fact that they did have that influence among the common population. One other interesting thing about the Pharisees, we don't know this from the Bible, but the Pharisees were the only party that survived the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. And we'll talk a little bit about that later when we look at the other parties, but I hadn't realized that the Pharisees, you know, when you think about all these parties, the Pharisees were the only ones that actually survived the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans and had a legacy after that. And then finally, we know that there were Christians who came from the party of the Pharisees. Paul, of course, is the biggest example. He was a Pharisee of Pharisees. And then Nicodemus also, who came and met with Jesus and then showed up again to assist Joseph of Arimathea with the burial preparation of Jesus after his crucifixion. So we know that there were at least two that are mentioned in the New Testament that were from the party of the Pharisees, and surely there were others as well who were converted. That's all I have to say about the Pharisees. Any comments or questions before I move on to the Sadducees? Yes, Pastor. So the question is there any modern-day manifestation of the Pharisees other than in our own hearts? And I don't know the answer to that. I think that the Jewish tradition has come down from the Pharisees. So the oral tradition was from the Pharisees. It wasn't from the other parties, which became a real fundamental basis of Judaism down through the ages. And I expect, to some extent, the Judaism today, I think they still hold and study the same documents that came down from this period of time. That was an interesting thing that I learned during the study. I don't really know what the legacy is directly, other than it seems to follow through with the oral tradition. Yes, Bill. So Jews has a lot of different meanings in the Bible. One of them could be all Jews, right? But the way John uses it, and he does this with other terms as well, like world, but the way John uses the term Jews is most often referring to people that are opposing Jesus. So John the Baptist first and Jesus immediately after him were opposed to the teaching of the Pharisees. So when the Pharisees are sending and the Jews are sending people to, they're really investigating, you know, who is this guy? What's he saying? And We're actually going to look at some of that when we get to the actual confrontation part. There's another issue there, which is religious authority. So these are the religious authorities. But now if there's a true prophet that's come on the scene, the true prophet is going to trump the religious authorities of the day. So there's a conflict there, authority conflict as well, that the Pharisees are concerned about. I said this last week, but there's obviously lots of points here where we could interject Jesus's opinions, and I'm saving that to the end. So my plan is to go through the Pharisees, Sadducees, and the Essenes, and then look at Jesus's interaction with the sects. So that's coming. I'm not going to ignore that, but it was a difficult thing to try to figure out how to organize it. Should I insert all the comments here, or should I take it as a body? And I decided to put it at the end. So that's coming, if you're wondering about what Jesus thinks about all this. Okay, any other questions on the Pharisees? Okay, let's turn to the Sadducees, which is the second major group that we find in the New Testament. So first of all, their origin and their history. Where did the Sadducees come from? Well, just like the Pharisees, the term Sadducee, the origin of the name Sadducee is a bit unclear. I found at least three possibilities from different scholars. One of them is that it's a derivation from the name Zadokite. So you remember Zadok was the priestly line, the good priestly line. It might be a derivation from that. Perhaps some other people think it's the name of a historical individual that maybe started the party of the Sadducees. And then F.F. Bruce put forward that he thinks that it's probable that it was derived from a term that indicated a position on the council during the time of the Hasmoneans. So we don't really know where the name Sadducee comes from or what it exactly refers to. So a little less clear even than with the Pharisees. The Sadducees are mentioned in the same place. Historically, the first mention of them is in Josephus. It's actually in the same place that he mentions the Pharisees. He mentions the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes all at the same time as being in existence at the time of Jonathan. Remember, Jonathan is one of the brothers of Judas Maccabee, and the dates where he was on the scene as the leader of the people was 152 to 143 BC. We know that the parties arose during that time period of the early Maccabean leaders. The Sadducees came to power as advisors of the Hasmoneans, and we've looked at that several times now. The falling out of the Pharisees with John Hyrcanus and the elevation of the Sadducees and then down through the reign of Jannaeus Alexander, we were just talking about a moment ago. So down to about 76 BC, the Sadducees exerted a lot of influence politically and religiously. And then there was a reversal back to the Pharisees again. And then in the New Testament, we see a mixed body of Pharisees and Sadducees on the council. There's a quote here, there's some terms that I pulled out from a scholar named Hayes here about the Sadducees. When he's talking about the conflict with John Hyrcanus, with the Pharisees, and then how John Hyrcanus favored the Sadducees afterwards. And he says that these are a number of quotes that I've strung together here. They were from the wealthy priestly nobility. They were state supporting. And they were more prepared to make religious compromises to further their economic interests. So hopefully that paints a little bit of a picture of what they were like. You remember the Hellenist movement also, which was kind of happening at the same time period, the Maccabean, the Hasmoneans. The Hellenist movement was very strong at that time. And so the Sadducees would have been the ones who were accepting or embracing the Hellenist movement. So a number of people believe that they really originated in that Hellenistic movement and then evolved into the Sadducean party, which was sort of viewed as a compromising party between the Greek ideas and the Jewish ideas. And then, again, for their own interests, economic and political interests. So hopefully you can see right there a pretty big contrast between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Pharisees, none of that would have been true of the Pharisaical party. So right there, you can already see a pretty big difference between the two parties. Okay, so what did the Sadducees believe in terms of religious beliefs? It's interesting that many of their beliefs are presented as contrast with the Pharisees. So where the Pharisees, we have a positive statement about what they believe. A lot of the Sadducean beliefs are rejection of something that the Pharisees believed in. That's kind of how their beliefs are painted for us in Josephus. So we have a contrast being set up between their belief systems. So the number one thing that set them at odds with the Pharisees was that they rejected the oral tradition of the Pharisees. So when we were just talking about the oral tradition has really come down even to the modern day in Judaism as an authoritative tradition. And the Pharisees were the originators of that oral tradition and the keepers of it down through the ages. And the Sadducees rejected that oral tradition and held to the written law only as authoritative. Josephus says that they rejected the tradition and held to only those observances that are, quote, in the written word. Now, it's commonly stated that they only recognized the Pentateuch, or the first five books of Moses, as authoritative, and that they rejected the rest of the written Old Testament. This is not 100% clear at all, but I'm just stating this. You'll find this if you read secondary sources and other scholars, you'll often see that just stated. You know, they rejected the rest of the Old Testament and only held to the five books of Moses. There's three reasons that are given for this. First of all is that Josephus says in one place that the Sadducees hold to the law only. Law is in quotes there, it's his term. So he says that the Sadducees hold to the law only. So some people have said, okay, well that's the Torah, the five books, the Pentateuch. Another reason given is that early Christian writers, examples here are Hippolytus, Origen, and Jerome, stated this also, that the Sadducees only held to the first five books. And then it's also suggested that their adherence to the Pentateuch alone might be an explanation for why they rejected the resurrection and why they had a very strong view of human responsibility, which relates to their doctrine of free will. And then along those lines, with rejecting the resurrection, some people suggest that Jesus, when he was disputing with the Sadducees on the resurrection of the dead, he used a passage from Exodus, so it was in the books of Moses, to prove the doctrine of the resurrection to the Sadducees, rather than some more clear passages such as Daniel. There's a passage in Daniel 12:2, Isaiah 26:19, and others. And the reason suggested is that the Sadducees wouldn't accept those other ones, but they would accept something from Exodus. So that's why Jesus used maybe something that in our minds might be a little more of an obscure text to prove the resurrection. So those are the three reasons that are given for that. It's not 100% clear whether they held to the whole written word or just the five books. To deal with the Josephus argument that they hold to the law only, I think you have to read that in context with what Josephus says elsewhere when he paints the contrast between the oral tradition and the written word. My opinion is Josephus was likely there just thinking of the written law, not just the first five books, because he sets that contrast up elsewhere in his writings in the Antiquities. There's actually a number of plausible reasons given why Jesus used that Exodus verse and not the ones that might be more clear. There's some good arguments for that as well. And I meant to bring a book to read you those arguments, and I just realized I don't have it with me. So I won't be following up on that. But F.F. Bruce has a couple paragraphs that lay out the arguments for why Jesus would have used Exodus and not Daniel or Isaiah. You know, at least plausible reasons why he may have done that. At any rate, whether the Sadducees, it's not going to be 100% clear to us what they held in terms of the written scriptures, but Josephus does tell us that great disputes and differences have arisen between the two sects, that is the Pharisees and the Sadducees, because of that belief, that is written word versus the oral tradition. So that's a big difference between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Another major belief of the, again, painting it negatively against the beliefs of the Pharisees, the Sadducees did not believe in a spirit world. They rejected the existence of angels. They rejected the existence of demons. And again, we see that in that passage in Paul's trial in Acts chapter 23. So basically, we think about what that means. They were materialists. They didn't believe in a supernatural realm of spirits, demons, angels. And so along with that, which kind of goes together, I think, they rejected the resurrection of the body and they rejected immortality. And we see that clearly. Well, it's kind of referenced in that Acts 23 passage, but we also see it in the Gospel of Mark, It's actually in Matthew as well, but I'm going to read a section here from Mark chapter 12 that deals with this. This is on the marriage at the resurrection. Remember, the Sadducees came to Jesus with a question about the resurrection. And the question was not an innocent question. They were testing him because they didn't believe in the resurrection. So they were bringing this trick case before him to see what he would say. I wouldn't say that this is an honest question about the resurrection. But here's how that goes. You guys know the story. In Mark chapter 12, starting at verse 18. Then the Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came to him with a question. Teacher, they said, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies and leaves a wife but no children, the man must marry the widow and have children for his brother. Now, there were seven brothers. The first one married and died without leaving any children. The second one married the widow, but he also died leaving no child. It was the same with the third. In fact, none of the seven left any children. Last of all, the woman died too. At the resurrection, whose wife will she be, since the seven were married to her? Jesus replied, Are you not in error because you do not know the scriptures or the power of God? When the dead rise, they will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. Now, about the dead rising, have you not read in the book of Moses, in the account of the bush, how God said to him, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob? He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. You are badly mistaken. By the way, that's the text from Exodus that Jesus is using there. But you can see what he's saying. You're in error. You're badly mistaken. You don't know the scriptures or the power of God. And incidentally, this is also one of the important texts for us about the resurrection. What's it going to be like? All of us have probably had those questions, you know. What are those relationships going to be like after the resurrection? And this is one of the texts that gives us a little bit of insight into that. But anyways, you can see here that the Sadducees rejected the resurrection of the body and the immortality of the soul. Josephus says that they believe that the souls die with the bodies. And then we see another example, incidental example of this in Acts chapter 4 with the apostles. You remember the apostles were teaching in the temple, preaching in the temple really. And the religious authorities come to them and confront them. And it's very interesting what it says there. It says that they confronted them because they were greatly concerned about their teaching in Jesus, the resurrection of the dead. So the Sadducees came and confronted the apostles because they were preaching about the resurrection, which is something that they didn't believe in. And then, of course, we know the famous use that Paul made of this at his trial, throwing the council into an uproar when he declared himself a Pharisee who believes in the resurrection of the dead in Acts chapter 23. You know, remember the chaos that resulted after he announced that. The Pharisees and the Sadducees going at each other because they disagreed on the doctrine of the resurrection and the fact that a spirit may have spoken to Paul. At any rate, that's the rejection of the resurrection of the body and immortality that goes along with the materialism. So along with that, if you don't believe in the resurrection, you don't believe in immortality, you don't believe in rewards and punishments either. And that was something that the Sadducees denied. Some people believe that the reason that they denied those things was because they saw them as an import from Persian religion. And I don't know much more about that, but I've read that in a number of places that one of the reasons suggested that the Sadducees rejected these things was because they viewed it as a Persian thing and not a Jewish thing that was, you know, found in the Old Testament. And then the final thing that I wanted to highlight about their belief system is that they had a strong view of free will. Remember what we said about the Pharisees' view. They had a view of free will, but they also had a strong view of providential control of God and the sovereignty of God. The Sadducees, in contrast, had a very libertarian view of the free will of man. There is no such thing as predestination or fate, as Josephus calls it. You know, you can see some very major belief contrast between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. That's the end of what I have to say about the Sadducees' belief system. And you get to the end and you might be asking, what's left? You know, what do you believe in if you don't believe in any of that stuff? You don't believe in the resurrection. You don't believe in the supernatural. You don't believe in predestination, rewards and punishment. So what's left? What are these Sadducees doing, you know, if they don't believe any of that stuff? I don't have a lot to say to answer that other than, again, look at the situation in our world today. What do theological liberals believe? You know, what was Machen fighting against back in the 1930s? He was fighting against the denial of the supernatural. I mean, fundamentally, liberalism turns into a religion of man, where man is the authority, man is in control, and there is no supernatural events that, you know, there's no supernatural invading into the natural realm. It's a naturalistic religion. And I think we have a lot, there's a lot of parallels between what we know about the Sadducees and what modern day liberals hold to. So maybe shouldn't be so surprising. And the reason I say that is the Sadducees were the religious leaders. Well, theological liberals, they still get up in the pulpit. We're studying philosophy in our school with my son, and we just got through Schleiermacher, Friedrich Schleiermacher. You know, he's a father of liberalism. He denied the supernatural, but he got up in the pulpit every Sunday and preached. And you wonder, what was he preaching? The same thing that is being preached in the liberal pulpits today. So, yes, Pastor. So we can put a little plug in here for the confession class coming up. Pastor's going to be leading. The confession is just wonderful. You know, anybody that's been through seminary has had to read through all the big theology books cover to cover, you know. And the confession, it doesn't go into the detail, but all of the major points are there in the confession in a very readable small paragraph. And then if you want to expand on it, you can look at the proof text and you can go to the other bigger systematic theologies to expand on it. I mean, it's a remarkable document that summarizes what's in, you know, the teaching of Scripture. So just to put a little plug in for the class coming up in February. Yes, Jen. So the question is, how could these parties with such radically different views coexist in a body like the Sanhedrin and come to consensus judgment? I don't know how much the Sanhedrin was involved in civil disputes. They were primarily reduced to a religious court under Herod and the Romans. So they were taking up religious questions, which is why the apostles were constantly being brought before the Sanhedrin. Jesus was brought before them. But remember, they had a common belief in the written law. So their standard of judgment, just like we have standards of judgment for courts today, their standard of judgment would have been the written law. And they did have a good deal of agreement about that. How often they got into disputes about the resurrection of the dead or something, I don't know. That's where they would have major differences. But I assume that the Pharisees must have have compromised on their view of oral tradition because the Sadducees rejected that outright. So I'm not sure to what extent the oral law would have had authority in the Sanhedrin. Probably, I'm guessing, they stuck just to the written law. So I think they did have a lot of common ground there to make religious judgments. I don't think so. I mean, I haven't come across anything like that, like a written statements from the Sanhedrin. I mean, the closest thing we have is the rabbinical tradition with all the Jewish literature that we reviewed earlier. But, you know, which strongly was influenced by the Pharisee party, not the Sadducees. So I don't know if there's any record of any written judgments or anything from the Sanhedrin. I haven't come across anything like that. So my next point was actually exactly what Pastor already said, was that very similar to today's modern liberalism, the Sadducees then had a very much this worldly focus. That was their focus, was on what they could do in this world. And Pastor had already mentioned that. Hopefully when we look at some of the characteristics then of the Sadducees, that will make sense. Some of the things that they did would make sense because of their theological beliefs. And so if we turn to their characteristics, first of all, their political and social position. Now, we've talked about the fact that the Sadducees had dominated the high priesthood in the New Testament era, but that doesn't mean that all of the Sadducees were priests, nor were all the priests Sadducees. So don't make that straight line equation just because of that. The high priesthood was dominated by the Sadducees, but that doesn't mean that all of the priests were Sadducees necessarily. D.S. Russell says that although there were priestly elements within the group of the Sadducees, they probably also included a high proportion of wealthy and influential laymen in the party. which kind of goes along with what we were saying earlier about the rich, more privileged backgrounds. So they would generally have been from a relatively small number of wealthy aristocratic families. They would have been very interested in worldly wealth. That all goes along with that. Josephus does tell us that they were the minority party. There weren't as many Sadducees, but because they were more from the privileged class and they dominated the high priesthood, they had a significant influence in the Sanhedrin, for instance. So Russell says that, this is a quote from D.S. Russell, "We can picture them then as a small and select group of influential and wealthy men who exercised considerable power in the civic and religious life of the nation." So that hopefully paints a picture then of the Sadducees. I mentioned that they had control of the high priesthood. That means that they would have been dominant in control of the temple and as well as the Sanhedrin. Remember, the high priest was the chairman of the Sanhedrin. And we notice whenever there are disputes in the temple area with the apostles, the Sadducees are always involved and the priests are always involved with the dispute. And we see that in Acts chapter 4, for instance. The temple guard and the priests and the Sadducees would have been involved in arresting the apostles in that first arrest in Acts chapter 4. And then we've already stated this, but since they were materialist, their focus was really on this world, the natural realm. So what does that mean? Well, it means they would be focusing on wealth, political stability, things like that. Things that would keep them comfortable and in an authoritative position in this life. In contrast with the Pharisees, we've talked a lot about how the Pharisees were very popular with the people and actually looked out for the interests of the people. The Sadducees were very unpopular with the people, and you might expect that if they're from the wealthy aristocratic families. Josephus says, I think I might have put a couple of these quotes on your outline, Josephus says, "The Sadducees are able to persuade none but the rich." Okay, so that shows you their inability to persuade the common people. And then Josephus also says that after they become the political leaders, they have to, quote, "addict themselves to the Pharisees' ideas because the multitude would not otherwise bear them." So they basically have to at least give lip service to the Pharisees' views and ideals, even if they didn't agree with them, just so that they would be accepted by the common people. So you can see that they were politicians. Josephus also has another interesting thing to say about them. He says that they were even unfriendly towards each other, which is interesting. So he says, "Their conversation with those that are of their own party is as barbarous as if they were strangers to them." So I got a kick out of that one. Now remember, Josephus was a Pharisee. So he tells us in his autobiography that he examined the three parties, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes, and after a period of like 3 years, he decided that the Pharisees were the best party to follow. So he kind of joined with the Pharisees. So his views are probably a little biased here, slanted maybe, but I'm sure there's a grain of truth in it also with the Sadducees infighting and being very barbarous towards one another. And then, of course, one of the things that they're characterized by is a conflict with the Pharisees. And we've seen that. You can see that it's a conflict in almost every area. The conflicts over beliefs, the oral tradition, the resurrection, the supernatural, and then as well as their political views. They were the compromising Hellenist party that wanted to compromise with the authorities, where the Pharisees were more, they were respectful of Rome, but they tried not to compromise their beliefs for political expediency. And then because of their concern for maintaining the civic order, remember the comment that Pastor made earlier, when you're this worldly focused, you're going to be focusing on maintaining the civil order, the civic order. And because of that focus on maintaining civic order of the theocracy under the high priest as the leader, they would have been very suspicious in faith in a coming Messiah. For instance, why would they be suspicious about a coming Messiah? Why was Herod the Great suspicious of the one born king of the Jews? David?
Because they would pretty much lose their power.
Exactly, they were a threat. They're a threat to their...
It's a variable.
It's a variable that they don't have control over. So just like Herod the Great was very concerned about somebody who's born king of the Jews, the Sadducees would have been very suspicious of a coming messianic figure because that's going to upset the political order. And so, again, just think in terms of this worldly focus. That's where their focus was. We're just about out of time here. I wanted to mention one other thing. Our tradition tells us that James, so this would have been James, the brother of Jesus, who took over the leadership of the church. So it wouldn't be James the apostle that was the first martyr, or I guess the second martyr after Stephen. But James, who's often called the just, this is the James that was the leader in Jerusalem. He was put to death by a Sadducean high priest. So the tradition tells us. Josephus mentions this, and actually that is in Eusebius as well, the story of how James was martyred. So the Sadducees were persecuting the Christian church as well, just like the Pharisees were. And then we already mentioned that the Pharisees survived the destruction of the temple, and that was their legacy. The Sadducees fade from the scene after the destruction of Jerusalem. You might kind of expect that if the political order has been upset, and there is no political order or authority anymore where they were invested. And if you don't have a religious basis to continue your beliefs, it probably isn't surprising that they didn't survive the destruction of the temple in AD 70. So that's all I have to say about the Sadducees. And we are out of time, but are there any last questions or comments about anything we've covered so far, Pharisees or Sadducees? Yes, Jen. Towards the end of Herod's life is when Josephus made that statement. That's probably in one of the theological dictionaries or the Bible dictionaries. If you read on Sadducees, it'd probably tell you. But, I mean, Josephus says they were a minority, so probably less, you know, way less probably. And from what some of the other quotes I read, that there were a relatively small number of wealthy aristocratic families. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Tom. I think so. Probably. They were the recipients of the tithe, probably, right? So, yeah, that's a good point. Deep pockets and short arms. Yeah, I didn't read anything specifically about that, but that would be my guess. Interested in hoarding worldly wealth. If there's no afterlife, why give away your wealth?